Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, depending on what time zone you're joining us from. And welcome to today's webinar, Food Fraud Prevention in an Organic World. My name's Amy. I'm a member of the marketing team here at Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety, Inc. I'll be facilitating today's webinar and offering technical support to our speakers. Today, we're very excited to be welcoming back Dr. John Spink once again of MSU for the presentation, as well as a new face on the panel, Gwendolyn Wired of the Organic Trade Association. We'll be introducing them both to you all a little bit later on. But now we're going to go ahead and hand things over to Paul DeMaron. He is our Senior Vice President of Food Safety and Supply Chain here at PJFSI. He joined us back in January of 2020 and has over 35 years of experience in the hospitality, service, and retail agri-food sectors. Paul's also a board member of the OFPA, that's the Ontario Food Protection Association. He's also an advisory council member with the George Washington University School of Business for their digital marketing certificate program. Before he came to PJFSI, Paul worked for 17 years in the certification industry and had clients in every sector from food safety and supply chain to brand protection and quality. Paul also worked for many years in management system certification, and before that, he was a professional chef and a consultant for over 20. So Paul, I'll hand things over to you, and you can take it away.
Great. Thank you very much, Amy. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Let's get right to it. I am going to introduce you to our speakers before we get going. Dr. John Spink, as you know, is an old friend of ours here at PJRFSI. And he is with the Food Fraud Initiative and Assistant Professor of Supply Chain Management in the Business College at Michigan State University. Since 2013, John has been the director of the Food Fraud Initiative at MSU, and his early research and industry engagement supported the foundation of food fraud prevention, including as a member of the GFSI Food Fraud Think Tank that developed their first compliance requirements, and also as the lead author of the article defining the public health threat of food fraud, which is really most widely cited definition of the term, and also their food prevention MOOC, or their massive open online courses, which are some of the most common training resources used today. Welcome back, Dr. John. And Gwendolyn Wired, who has been actively working in the organic industry for 25 years, she serves as the Vice President of Regulatory and Technical Affairs of the OTA, or the Organic Trade Association, where she works there on the development of policy strategy through regulatory engagement in the interest of OTA's mission and its members. Prior to the OTA, Gwen worked with Oregon TILF, where she served as their technical specialist in policy and material review. Gwendolyn completed her certificate as an independent organic inspector back in 1997 and is subcontracted for multiple certifiers inspecting a diverse range of operations throughout the country. She holds a degree in fermentation science with a minor in chemistry. She serves on the board for the Organic Materials Review Institute and is an advisory council member for the Global Organic Textile Standard. Thank you, Gwen, as well for joining us. I can't wait. I'm going to interact with you both throughout the presentation. Thank you for your time. At this point, I think I'm going to pass it over to you, Gwen, to get us started.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And I'll pop on screen here and say hello to everybody. And John, if you want to join me so I'm not hanging out here alone. Great. All right. Wonderful. Well, thanks so much, everybody. This is it's a real pleasure to have the opportunity to present today on food fraud prevention in an organic world. And of course, I'm honored to have Dr. Spink by my side. So we're going to move through a number of slides today and co-present. We're going to be focusing really in two areas. The first is going to be on the strengthening organic enforcement rule. We'll just go by its respected acronym SOE. And then the second area we'll be focusing on is a private sector initiative that will support the SOE rule, as well as be a significant contributor in terms of a private sector initiative that's out there to prevent organic fraud. Before we get started, for those of you that are not familiar with the Organic Trade Association, I just wanted to provide a quick background. Just give me a second here, and the slide should. Uh-oh. Doesn't seem to be switching on my end now.
That's all right. I'll get it for you, Gwen. Just go ahead and prompt me when you want slides to move.
Okay, fantastic. I'm sorry about that. So the Organic Trade Association, we were founded in 1985 to promote and protect and advance organic agriculture. We're the leading voice for organic trade in the United States. We're representing over 9,500 organic businesses across all 50 states. Really what makes us unique is that our members include growers, processors, distributors, importers, exporters, certifiers, retailers, essentially everyone in the organic supply chain that's growing, making, and advocating for organic. Our vision, our mission is to grow organic and achieve excellence in agriculture, protect the environment, and enhance community well-being. Next slide. So I think before jumping into the strengthening organic enforcement rule, just to set the stage with some information about the growth and really the success of organic, because it's really what has put us here today with this with the actions that we're taking around fraud prevention. Organic really is a bright spot in the U.S. farm economy. We started at $1 billion in 1990. That's when the Organic Foods Production Act was passed. And we have been the fastest growing sector in agriculture since the regulations were implemented in 2002. And at that point, you can see we were at $9 billion. Since the implementation of the regulations, we have now reached $62 billion, and that's fresh out of our recent 2021 industry survey. So the Organic Trade Association publishes an industry survey every year, and we have over 28,000 certified operations nationwide. So we continue to grow. It is a good challenge that we have, which is to keep up with the demand. And I know the title of this presentation is Organic Food Fraud, but if you go to the next slide, you'll see that the organic regulations cover more than just food. This takes a look at that $62 billion and breaks it into the sales for food versus non-food. So under the non-food area, we're talking about textiles and fiber, which is the leading non-food category, followed by dietary supplements. And so the non-food sector is very small, but it actually has been a very fast-growing sector. More and more consumers, shoppers are really connecting the dots between the food they eat and the fiber, the textiles, all those other products, because they all go back to the farm and how the products are grown. Next slide. And so if we look at the organic label and the standard behind it, it's valued and it's transparent in, I think, what we know is a sea of sometimes confusing label claims. We worked with Nielsen. They conducted a study looking at 100,000 households across the United States. And the results of that study found that over 82% of households across the US are now purchasing some organic products. Next slide. So from a global perspective, organic food has reached $122 billion US dollars. The US continues to be the largest market, followed by the EU, 39%, and China at 8%. Next slide. So I think, you know, when we look at the fact that organic truly is, it's no longer a niche market. It's in the, you know, aisles of every grocery store you go to. We are continuing to be challenged to keep the supply up with demand. So we are in a situation really that that John knows very much about, which, you know, what is the recipe for fraud? What creates the fraud opportunity? And when you have a huge demand, a global market, you have products that have a price premium, And there is a supply challenge that really creates this recipe for fraud opportunity. And so we do in fact have some real detected organic fraud situations that have come up over the past 5 years. I think that organic fraud continues to be rare, but really where we're at is that we are 100% fully embracing the fact that it's real. Organic fraud is here. And our position is that fraud cannot be tolerated in the United States or outside of the United States. Whenever there is fraud anywhere in the organic system, it takes the value out of the organic supply chain. It hurts organic farmers everywhere, and it certainly hurts consumer trust, which is really what the organic label is entirely based on, is that consumer trust that what they're buying meets the standard that they expect, and that what they're buying, that they can trust in what that label represents. So next slide, please. So when we look at what's necessary to tackle organic fraud, we know that action is needed on several fronts. We know that it takes government engagement. We know that it takes private sector commitment and prevention. And we know it's really critical that if anyone suspects or detects fraud, that they're using the system as it was set up, and they're reporting that information to the appropriate authorities so that they can act on it. So what John and I are going to look at today, we're going to look at government engagement. So that's the SOE rule. And then we're going to pivot to the private sector prevention program that's been built to support both the rule as well as to give the private sector really just an excellent opportunity to be able to engage and to be able to build their own organic fraud prevention plans. So next slide. So the strengthening organic enforcement rule, looking at the what, the why, and the who, in terms of what, I'm going to go into a few more details in terms of what's in the proposed rule, but what it is literally the largest regulatory change or update to the organic regulations since the rule was implemented in 2002. It was created to address organic fraud, to ensure organic integrity, and to protect consumer trust. Really, all of the updates to the regulations are addressing increased accountability and visibility. And again, we'll take a closer look at that. Who will be impacted? And this is really important. Everyone in the global organic supply chain will be impacted. If you are sitting in the virtual audience and you are engaged in organic trade, you can be rest assured that this proposed rule, this final rule that's going to come out, will apply to you. Next slide. So before we take a closer look at the topics that are covered in SOE, I just want to take a quick look at the process. This is where we're at in the process and where we're going. There's always questions that come up, specifically, when is the final rule going to come out? So just backing up a little bit, though, this rule is the result of congressional mandates that came about in the 2018 Farm Bill. So OTA was a driver. We were in the driver's seat. We were working closely with Congress. We had some major fraud that was happening, fraudulent grains that were coming into the United States from the Black Sea in 2017. We knew that we needed to take immediate action. So we worked closely with Congress to ensure that the Farm Bill would provide the National Organic Program with the funding and the authority to develop a broader and more effective set of tools to strengthen its enforcement and oversight. And just, you know, to make sure everybody's clear in terms of the USDA National Organic Program, they have the authority to enforce the organic regulations. They also oversee all of the certifiers, the accredited certifiers that carry out the certification process.
Glenn, can I ask a quick question? Can you talk to us for a second about what kind of assistance or training is going to be provided to industry once the final rule is released?
Absolutely. So the final rule, we're expecting that out sometime in spring of 2022. And like I said, it's a game changer. It's going to be huge. There's going to be a lot of work to do. So I think there's a few places that, at least a few places, I hope, that we can be looking for assistance. Certainly the National Organic Program is going to be providing educational information, a lot of, you know, overview summaries to be able to help understand the final rule. The Organic Trade Association, we certainly are going to be all hands on deck, providing our members with summaries, with trainings. We are actively working, you know, continue to work to support grants and efforts to build human capital capacity for, you know, more inspectors, more certifiers that have the expertise. I also think that certifiers will be providing resources to help operations to comply, not only to comply with the changes in the final rule, but also there's going to be many, many operations that will need to get certified. So I think those are three huge places that everybody can be looking to: the Organic Trade Association, your certifier, as well as the National Organic Program.
Okay, thank you.
So I think, you know, we had the proposed rule came out in August 2020. We had a 60-day comment period. Now we're essentially waiting for that final rule to make its way through the clearance pipeline. So we understand that the National Organic Program, they have completed their writing. So this final rule, it's left the building, so to speak. It's left USDA, and it's going through its legal review, and it's working its way through that final clearance pipeline. Spring of 2022 is the date that the final rule is expected out. We just have to wait and see whether it makes that. And then I think it's important to understand that the final rule will be released, and then there'll be the effective date and the implementation period. And so we can expect a 1 year implementation. So that would be 2 months for the effective date and 10 months for the implementation. We will see when the final rule is released whether there is more time for certain provisions in the final rule. There were many questions that NOP put out there during the proposed rule. You know, do you think that 1 year is enough to be able to meet the requirements of this new rule? And so as we looked at the comments that came in, many stakeholders said, well, you know, in terms of meeting the import, electronic import certificates or some of the other areas that were very complicated, they said perhaps we'll need a 2 year implementation period. So we'll be looking for all that. And again, in terms of the resources that OTA will provide, we'll be looking at, you know, what is it going to take to be able to get everybody into compliance within, you know, 1 year or 2 years. So let's take a look at the big topics that are covered in the proposed rule. If you go to the next slide here, there are 16 topics that are addressed in the rule. And so there's no way that I'm going to go through each one in all the detail, but do know that when we get to the end of the presentation, I've provided links that will take you to some really excellent summaries of the proposed rules, the comments that we submitted, really everything that you need if you want to dig in and learn more about the specifics of the proposed rule and what to expect. But what I do want to flag here is this first one, reducing the types of handlers exempt from organic certification. This is a biggie, and this is one of the congressional mandates. Right now, the organic regulations, everybody in the supply chain must be certified, but there are some exceptions, what we call exempt or excluded operations, specifically for traders, brokers, distributors, operations that aren't physically handling products, but instead they're just brokering that sale from buyers to sellers, warehouses, distribution centers. This rule will require handlers, all handlers, to be certified. So everyone in the supply chain. So that's a big deal. Brokers, traders, distributors, warehouses, retailers and transporters will continue to be excluded from certification, but there are literally thousands of traders and brokers and distributors out there that will need to get certified. And that's really to close what we've identified, you know, some gaps in the supply chain where we have specifically identified fraud has been occurring, where those gaps are at. Another biggie is the requirement of the use of electronic import certificates. So every shipment of organic products imported into the United States will need to be associated with an NOP import certificate, regardless of the country of origin. Again, that's something tied to a congressional mandate. There will be new record keeping and fraud prevention procedures to improve supply chain traceability. That's another huge area, and I've, you know, in bold, I've put fraud prevention procedures because we're going to look very closely at that. And then I've got a number of topics that that are all falling underneath of enhancing accreditation and certification oversight. So just to call out a few that I think are really key, standardized organic certificates are going to be required. So these will all be generated from one central database, which is known as the Organic Integrity Database. Certifiers will be required to increase their data reporting. So we hope anyways, the final rule will require every certifier to report acreage on each of the operations that they certify. And that will be able to help us have a better accounting of total acreage in the United States, outside of the United States, so we can get a better feel for doing more of a country to country mass balance. Announced inspections, unannounced inspections. Currently, that is the practice, but this rule will formalize the requirement for unannounced inspections to occur. There will be a requirement for traceback and mass balance audits. Again, this is a practice right now, but it's not a consistent practice. It's not something that is required in the regulations. It's just a best practices that inspectors and certifiers carry out. There will be specific standards for grower groups. Right now, this practice of grower group certification, where you have a lot of small, similar farms in a region that are all operating under one organic systems plan. It's something that's in practice, but we don't have specific standards around grower groups. There's also going to be a new look at equivalency arrangements and really what the focus is when you're making trade agreements between one country and the next. For example, between the United States and the EU, we have an equivalency arrangement right now with the EU and many other countries. Historically, we've really looked at the differences between standards. How similar are they? How different are they? This regulation is going to require a closer look at a country's competency in their oversight and enforcement. Would we have an equivalency arrangement? Would we have a trade agreement with a country that doesn't have very robust oversight, such as what we have here in the United States? The answer would be no. We were only going to have trade agreements with countries that have very robust oversight. So again, there's a lot of detail in the regulation, but what we want to, and we need to wait to see what the final regulation is specifically going to spell out. We have a really good idea about what's going to be in there, but we just have to wait for the final and go from there. What we do know is going to be in there is that there is going to be a requirement for operations to have fraud prevention procedures. So if you go to the next slide, and this is really where the rubber hits the road here, and I'm going to bring Dr. Spink in, because this is a real delight. What we ended up seeing in the proposed rule, there's a lot of words here. This is a resource for all of you. We won't get into it, but this rule is going to require certified operations to develop an organic fraud prevention plan. 3 years before this proposed rule came out, I met Dr. Spink, and we started working together on developing a fraud prevention plan, or excuse me, program, and fraud prevention trainings, because of the events that were happening in the world around organic fraud and recognizing a need. While we were developing trainings, while we were developing a private sector initiative program for preventing fraud, USDA recognized the work that we were doing, and that translated into the proposed rule, where they have specifically put in requirements for operations to conduct a vulnerability assessment, to identify weaknesses in the supply chain, to develop mitigation measures to correct those vulnerabilities, to essentially develop an organic fraud prevention plan. And in the proposed rule, they recognize the organic trade associations, what we're calling our Organic Fraud Prevention Solutions Program. They recognized it as a model private sector initiative that companies could enroll in order to achieve the requirements of the regulations. So I'm going to pause there because I think, you know, again, Dr. Spink, this was a huge moment for us to see that recognition in the proposed rule. And we'll talk a little bit more about kind of our history and what we created, but, you know, just your thoughts on this this requirement here in the regulation.
Yeah, well, it's been interesting to follow what NOP is doing, and you know, USDA really is taking this seriously and looking at what's out in industry, but at the same time being very clear of what's needed for protecting the integrity of the seal. And so it's really been amazing to see in a regulation, a requirement, something this clear. And you could kind of say, well, wow, you know, it's aligned with what we're already doing. Well, it, you know, you could say the chicken or the egg, what occurred. But a lot of what USDA did is look at what were best practices in industry and things like GFSI requirements. You know, so it was 2014, those were publicly stated, 2018 required. That was already out there. And GFSI is not just made up by itself. It's based on, you know, quality management principles, risk management principles, and applied. So really USDA looked at what their problem was and then, you know, wrote laws that used best practices that were already in place. So I think the thing that's great is that we see this isn't new. You know, the law is new, but the actions aren't. And so there's a lot of previous experience and research. And then, you know, then people like OTA synthesizing it into the specific organic question. So it's really great. I mean, it's really solid. If you've been addressing food fraud and product fraud in the past with those GFSI type principles, then you're really just adjusting. You're just tweaking it or changing some terminology. So it's been a really great foundation.
And that's exactly it. So if we go to the next slide, you know, again, the Farm Bill was 2018. We're just, you know, recently seeing this proposed rule in 2020. In 2018, 2017, actually, late 2017, that's when we saw the headlines in the Washington Post just announcing to the world that we had fraudulent organic grain coming in from the Black Sea region. And we very quickly formed a task force. It's the largest task force that we've ever had at the Organic Trade Association. We started off with the intent of creating a best practice guide, or just really kind of coming up with a list of best practices for fraud prevention. And that turned into this really wonderful guide that we developed, a best practices guide. But that guide was developed because I went online and I said, you know, somebody must have already created a fraud prevention recipe or a model. And that's when I found my way to Dr. Spink, and I looked at the GFSI model, really focusing on that vulnerability assessment and development of the mitigation measures. So just like John said, when we put together this best practice guide, it's based on what a company is already doing for FSMA, for GFSI, for your basic food fraud prevention program. We just designed it, tweaked it to fit the organic system. So the so first thing, go ahead. No,
well,
go ahead, John.
Something I'd add to this is that, you know, I've dealt across all industries, and the food industry, I don't know how it feels, but is by far the most organized when it comes to looking at things like common food safety practices, quality measures, and product fraud, dealing with food fraud, because you know that it's just having the one central standard. And then with USDA moving forward with the seal, and then someone like OTA as the trade organization supporting industry there, then you've got really a very common target, and it's based on a very specific need. Again, the food safety standards, and then now the SOE. So the food industry and the organic products industry is really fortunate that there's been this much focus and this much ability to focus in. And I think then, I mean, we were part of the early steps of saying, you know, what is a best practice? So there's a really solid theoretical academic foundation. So when you keep looking at these all make sense, and they fit together because there, again, there was that foundation and you've got the really specific requirements. So the food industry, I don't know how it feels, or organics as well, but it's really, really the most organized and coordinated of any industry.
That's great. And it really, I think it came together quite well. We developed this guide, and then we stood up a program. And so I think the program will take a couple minutes to talk about, because it's an excellent way for any certified operation getting ready to comply with SOE. These are great steps that you can take. And it's something that's available now, and it's not a certification program. So we call it again Organic Fraud Prevention Solutions, and it's a voluntary program that organic businesses can enroll in. And what we're providing is training, assessment, and then what's built into the system when I say ACA confirmation. ACA stands for Accredited Certifiers, Accredited Certifiers Association. The way that this program is set up, it's an internal quality control program. Again, it's not a certification or verification program. That's not what we're doing. We're supporting the existing organic certification program. It's not a outward facing label. You do get a certificate, but it's a certificate of completion for the program. But in a nutshell, what it does is it provides operations with a process for carrying out that vulnerability assessment and developing mitigation measures and developing an organic fraud prevention plan. And the real key to it is that the organic fraud prevention plan is submitted to the operations certifier, and the certifier reviews and approves that plan, and it becomes part of the organic systems plan, which is a requirement. Every certified operation must have an organic systems plan. And so it's really the connection. We've worked with the accredited certifiers on this program. This is where a private sector initiative ties into the certification system, in that going through this program, developing that plan, it's submitted to the certifier, and then it becomes part of that annual certification system. And again, this was all developed before we saw the strengthening organic enforcement proposed rule. So it fits together very, very nicely. When we developed the program, we recognized that the success of the program would be as many operations. The goal is to get every certificate holder to go through and complete the program, so that we can essentially achieve a target hardening for the entire organic industry, so that every buyer, every supplier has taken the time, they've gone through a robust process of identifying where their gaps and weaknesses are and putting mitigation measures in place so that they can't be penetrated by a fraudster. So really, it's the commitment for organic businesses that is going to drive the adoption and the process of strengthening the organic supply chain.
Gwen and Dr. John, I have a couple of questions here. First of all, how do people access the OFPS Guide to Best Practices? Is that going to be in the link she'll show later?
It is in the link. Now, we have an executive summary that's available to everyone and anybody that's interested, and there's a lot of great information in there, and there's some other resources that I'll present here in just a moment. To access the entire guide, you do need to enroll in the program, because as Dr. Spink knows quite well, the guide is the training, it's the manual to the trainings that we developed, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. So you do need to enroll in the program to get the guide, but we have some executive summaries and some good resources that you can look at to get a really good sense of what is in the guide.
Okay, thank you. My next question then is around, you mentioned that the program is going to become part of their annual review by the certifiers. Do you think that this is going to add any more, let's just call it audit time review for either the certifiers or the site? And if so, the reason I'm asking this question is, you know, I've seen a lot of programs over the years be introduced, and I've found that the ones that become mandated or a requirement, like a GFSI audit or something of that nature by major organizations or retailers, those are the ones that stick. The ones that are not mandated don't necessarily have, you know, as much staying power. So I just thought I would get your take on that.
Sure. I think that because this is mandated by the SOE, now to the level in terms of, you know, what's provided, I think it's nice to think about the program as a training opportunity. It really, certifiers are going to be looking to certified operations and saying, you know, I need to see your organic fraud prevention plan. So that audit, that part is in there. It's mandated. This program will support certification. I think it actually will be a matter of efficiency. It actually will decrease audit time because operations are going to show up for the inspection much more prepared. I think it's really going to help the overall system. John, I don't know if you have some comments about that.
Yeah, I think that's a great question about, you know, level of adoption, how thorough is the adoption. And obviously with USDA, you know, having the SOE coming out, OTA is mentioned in there. It's not endorsed, but even just mentioning it is something, official. So people are going to start to say, well, we need to comply. How do we do it? And then when there's there's general product fraud or food fraud programs or systems out there, but it's not specifically organic. And again, this was refined by the organic industry. So it'll be really interesting to see once people start to try to put pencil to paper. And I think that's what they're going to find is just the utility of this is going to make it efficient, as well as the confidence that it's been looked at thoroughly.
Yeah, I mean, I think the overall premise of this is perfect. I mean, it's exactly what the industry needs. It's what they should be looking at. You know, I think gone are the days where, food fraud in the organic industry is just about labeling. I think it's gotten, a lot more interesting, we'll call it, over the years with what people are able to do in the market. So I think this is very timely as well.
Yeah, so we'll move through these next slides quickly so we can get to some good Q&A. But just in terms of resources, we do offer a participant handbook. The entire handbook is available on the website. There's a lot of good information in there. I mean, honestly, just the executive summary in this participant handbook provides an operation with a lot of information that's helpful. You'll see that in the handbook, there's a section that covers the enrollment process. So if you go to the next slide, we can take a quick look at the enrollment process. Each step is described in detail in the handbook, different than the guide. So there's a registration step, there's a training step, and we'll take a look at that. And then there are these internal steps where the operation conducts that vulnerability assessment, puts together that organic fraud prevention plan. And then, as I mentioned, that plan is submitted to the certifier. They review it. They approve it. It becomes part of that overall organic systems plan. And that brings an operation to enrollment completion. There are benefits to enrolling in the program in terms of visibility. We have a web page, a place that you can go to find out, you know, who has enrolled in this program, who's completed the program. And We're hearing that that's helpful because if buyers are looking for a supplier, buyers are one operation is putting together their mitigation measures. Often the first place they're going to go is they want to make sure that their suppliers have also gone through the program, that their suppliers have a fraud prevention program. And so we're creating visibility where you can go out and search and look for companies that have completed the program. So more information on our website on the enrollment process. And then this next slide, I'm going to let John talk about this next slide because this really is the meat of the matter in terms of what the program is, the process that each operation goes through.
One thing that's great about this is it plugs every activity into a process. And I think that's the thing. Once you start to think about what do I really need to do, it's great to see it laid out really quickly. And one of the things is that's important is both ends of it. And starting very at the beginning, something as simple as creating a team, but at the other end of where it plugs into the official documentation, and you see update the organic system plan, that feeds into the USDA organic type requirements. So you see that it's been designed and built definitely fit for purpose. And then along the way, there again, a lot of these concepts sound pretty simple. Like, oh yeah, we could do a vulnerability assessment. You start to think about how to start with all the products. But then even with the pre-filter in there, that second step down, the initial screening, that there's a lot of direct insight there, and with the training programs behind it and links to other activities, there's a lot of guidance there as you move through. And then even to the point about implementation, because look on the right side, monitoring and verification activities. So those are all not only just basic good ideas, but things like record keeping then is calibrated to what are those needs from the organic industry to itself, but also for the types of regulations going on. So again, what I see in the product fraud area is that there's general concepts, then they've been applied to food, and now it's natural to go one step further to look at a specific problem within food, such as organic. Again, this covers all products, but into organics, but then specifically then refining it to that regulatory need. On the food fraud side, it refined it to GFSI, and here it's really looking to that organic system plan.
Great. So I've mentioned training a couple times now, so if we go to the next slide. So there's great resources out there. I mean, for no other reason to just to tap into the program, to access the training that is available through the Food Fraud Prevention Academy, and perfectly free to anyone, whether you enroll in the program or not, there's training that's a part of the National Organic Program's Integrity Learning Center. So this was a fun period of my life. John and I worked very closely developing multiple trainings. So we developed training that is for companies that enroll in the program. And so the training is put together for specifically for companies from a company or business perspective. And it's a requirement. In fact, it's one of the first things right out of the gate when a company enrolls in the program. The first thing they need to do is go through this training that is available through the Food Fraud Prevention Academy with their guide, because that's really the Bible to the program. At the same time, though, we were able to secure a grant to develop trainings for USDA for inspectors and certifiers. So really looking holistically, we need to make sure that we are training the businesses, but we also need to make sure that the inspectors and the certifiers have the skills, the tools, the understanding to be able to go into an operation and to be able to, you know, successfully, to effectively review an organic fraud prevention plan, to know what to look for, to know what questions to ask. So there are three courses that are available through the Organic Integrity Learning Center, specifically for inspectors and certifiers, but certainly helpful and very applicable for a company to go in and take those trainings as well.
Gwen, do you have an idea of time and resource commitment for the fraud prevention solution?
John, I love your answer when it comes to the question of time commitment and resources. So you take that if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, you know, really, how much is enough is a question. And it really depends on businesses, the specific business operation. So two sides of things. One is the preparation. So like the training here, the MOOC is 2 2-hour webinars. So you've got that amount of time. I think the USDA is about that for each of those. So you've got a bit of this education piece. Let's say 8 hours of actual training there. And that will get whoever is involved completely up to date on everything all the way through the inspection. So that's the preparation. And then the second part is then to take the organic fraud prevention plan. And the key is at the start to do that initial screening. And there's some companies that have a very, very low fraud opportunity just by the base of how they run their operations. And in that case, then it's a pretty quick through. Some companies, their product fraud prevention strategy is really just monitoring, just to look quarterly or monthly of what's happening and changing in the market. Does anything fundamentally change? Other companies are in the midst of things where there's a tremendous amount of fraud or vulnerabilities, and they have a lot of projects to do. And so those vulnerability assessments are a lot more detailed because you're looking at spending money, you know, proposing to spend money. So it's really undefined. What is key is that first step of doing the pre-filter, looking at it at the beginning can be very short. And the first step in implementing a strategy is to write the strategy. This doesn't mean that everything is completely done at the start, but it's do a vulnerability assessment and then you know, set the strategy in place and then start implementing it. And that's the real goal. So it's undefined, but the key is just get started. You know, look at the background, look at the basics. Your business is vulnerable in one way or another. Just get started, and then you really find out how bad is bad. Now remember, Gwen and I didn't create this problem for you or identify it. It's out there, it's inherent. Your business is inherently at risk, whether you know it or not. This just is a way to really reveal it. Think of it like if you have a health problem. You might not feel like you have brain cancer, but if someone finds it, then you know, MRI, then you'd like to deal with it. And I think that's the thing, is that you might not know what's going on, but this really helps build that foundation.
That's great. Just get started. And I think the organic regulations, the whole concept of the organic system plan is continuous improvement. You know, it's a living document. It's annual. It's something that you work on and you get better at it year after year. But in order to get better at it, you need to get started. And this really is an opportunity for each operation to look inward and say, what can I do to prevent fraud? Because there tends to be, in my experience, a lot of emphasis on what is the government going to do? What is the government going to do to prevent fraud? And USDA has been prioritizing fraud prevention now for 3 years, which is translated into the strengthening organic enforcement rule. But from our perspective, that's not enough. Each operation really needs to commit to taking a very close look at their individual operations and figuring out, you know, where those gaps and weaknesses are. So this is really all of us working together to address a problem that really would could make organic go away. Consumers are not going to purchase organic products if they don't trust that they are in fact organic. And so the threat of fraud is enough to really motivate everybody to get very, very busy. And so that's, you know, all of the time that has been and the resources that are being spent on getting everybody trained up to have that organic fraud prevention plan. It's important on so many levels. It's not just a requirement of the regulations. It's what we need to do to ensure the longevity of a very, very important market that consumers are asking for. So I think the next slide, there's a great opportunity in terms of who's eligible to enroll into the program. It is for certified organic businesses. You do need to be certified organic to be in the program, but we have a lot of organizations, companies, people coming to us saying, well, we're not certified organic, but we sure like this program and we sure want to figure out how to support this program. Certifiers, great example. Certifiers, they can't enroll in the program, but they certainly want to support it. They want to be able to get that information out to their clients and say, here's this great training opportunity. Here's this great program that will help you prevent fraud. It will help you comply with the regulations. So we have created some opportunities for industry partners, and I just wanted to highlight this one as a supporting partner. There's trainings required. There are some expectations in terms of what you will do to push the program out, to spread the good word that this is out there, and we're welcoming and inviting all certified operations to sign up. In exchange, we recognize our supporting partners, just like we recognize companies that have completed enrollment through press releases, through exposure on our website, through exposure in the events that we're having. We like to, you know, be loud and proud about the folks that think this is important and are joining us in this really collaborative effort to prevent fraud. So there is an opportunity for organizations that aren't certified but would just like to support our efforts. And then finally, I think, or almost finally, this next slide, just really the call to action, you know, just are you ready? Strengthening organic enforcement, AMS, USDA estimates that at least, and I think this is actually a conservative number, 1,922 new handlers will need to get certified, 961 domestic. Again, I think that's conservative. I think there's a lot more operations that are going to need to get certified because we're closing that exclusion that's in there for operations that aren't physically handling products. 26,408 certified operations and 18,400 operations in foreign countries will be impacted. So it's huge. Are you ready? That's the URL there for the organic fraud prevention program. Just to kind of take a look at where we're at right now, if you look at this next slide, you know, this is certainly a exposure for the companies that have enrolled in the program. But this really goes back to the statement around It's the commitment of businesses really all together to, you know, create an organic industry, target hardening. We're all working together to prevent fraud. And so just a thank you to the operations that have enrolled in the program. I'm sure you see some that you recognize. And then in terms of resources, so we can jump in and spend the last, you know, 8 minutes on answering your questions. That's the general website for OTA. All of our information on our website is available to members and to non-members. More specifically, the next slide, I've provided some very specific links where you can go in and get the summary, enroll in the program. We have a great, great website for finding organic ingredients and products. If you're just looking for an ingredient or product, we've created the Find Organic organic market overview. That's one of the kind of the bread and butter of what we do as a trade association, is make sure that you have information that you need on market overview and data reports, including international data reports. We're very active on the global organic trade, so there is a global organic trade guide. And then, of course, information on how to become an OTA member. And I couldn't not finish with that final note that, you know, we are welcoming everybody that's interested in becoming an OTA member. So I think we'll stop there, and just a huge thank you, and open it up for questions.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Gwen and Dr. Spink. So much great information in this slideshow. I wish we had more time for you to get even deeper into all the you know, the details of the new programs. But in the meantime, I will encourage everybody in the audience to send those questions in. We'll be getting to the Q&A in just a quick slide here. But I also want to offer you, or invite you all to register to join us for the two remaining webinars we have in 2021 before we wrap it up for the year. And those are on our website. They're free to register, just like this webinar was. You know, feel free to sign up, and we hope to see you in those sessions there. All right, we're going to go into the Q&A now, and it looks like we've got a couple questions that came in through the slide, so keep sending those in. There is no limit on how many you can send in. We'd love to hear from you. We've got a question here from Benjamin, referencing back to when you mentioned the fraud in organic grain, Gwen. What's the best source for finding information on food fraud in organic grain specifically?
Yeah, you know, there isn't one place that you can go to, but there's multiple places that you can go to, and John might have some good suggestions there as well. We certainly provide fraud alerts to our members. You can go into the National Organic Program. They have a specific webpage that's set up for enforcement activities. You can also go into my goodness, I'm forgetting the name of it right now. Well, the news, of course. John, jump in on some of your sources. I'm trying to think of the name of the site.
I think a real key is, you know, if you're looking at USDA organic issues, that's the place to start, NOP. And there's an unbelievable amount of information on their website. They disclose a lot because they're public documents, even things like what's a fraudulent document look like. And the key is then you know what to look for. So they disclose everything very quickly. That's a real key at the start. When you look at past incidents, that helps you understand the vulnerability. What occurred? Why did it occur? And you can see how it might have got through your system. For looking ongoing incidents, I mean, there's definitely product fraud databases, food fraud databases for incidents out there. A big key is you identifying what your product is and what your need is, and then you can check the different type of resources to see if that meets your need. If you find a great resource, but it's all seafood and you're asking about grain, then it could be the greatest seafood database or information source. It's not going to help you. So I think USDA is definitely the place to start, and then look specifically at your industry. And it could be then like import alerts or, you know, FDA type recalls for that product. Gwen?
Yeah, I think also in our fraud prevention guide, there's a whole resource section in there. And that's also available on our website. And it lists out, I don't know, probably 10 or 15 different resources that you can go to on fraud databases. Every place we could probably, you know, think of. So there is one central place you can go to, which we maintain and has, you know, all of the best places.
All right, fantastic. We've got a question here from Jack. Jack is asking about whether a food fraud prevention plan would fall under the food defense plan umbrella.
No. Oh, you probably want a little more than that. so early on, there was food safety and there was food defense. And food defense covered any type of intentional act. But after, specifically in the U.S., FSMA came out, say post 2009, food defense was clearly separate and was intentional acts with the intent for harm. So, and GFSI then further refined that as two requirements in food is one, well, one for food safety, one for food fraud, one for food defense. So they're definitely separate. And the reason why they're separate is that the intent is very different, you know, to get in and to cause harm. One thing with that is we find out quicker. With fraud, the economic gain is really a fundamentally different root cause. Now, further with food defense, is that after FSMA, then there was the intentional adulteration final rule for food defense that further narrowed FDA's focus, the prime focus and biggest concern are wide-scale harms. So if you're compliant with the intentional adulteration rule, food defense rule, then you know you're not really compliant with all FDA food defense, and you're not compliant with the GFSI food defense. On the other side is then it's really looking at a separate assessment for product fraud. And that doesn't mean that that's double the work or triple the work if you say there's a couple there. It really makes it more simple because you're looking at a very, very specific type of vulnerability that's fundamentally different than food defense or food safety.
All right, great. We've got a question now here from Mark. Mark asks, can the industry expect a public-facing supply chain map developed within Integrity or another database?
Sure. So I think in this reference to Integrity in all caps is the Organic Integrity Database. So that's our central NOP database. Just so I understand, a supply chain map, if we're talking about, you know, some sort of a link system where we can, you know, literally go from one operation to the next, I think that we saw it in the preamble. I think a long-term goal is for the Integrity database to be able to create, so you could pull that supply chain map that you're talking about out of it. We're not going to see that in this iteration in terms of the updates that are being made as a result of SOE, but there's certainly a placeholder for that. And there's a current conversation that's happening at the National Organic Standards Board level. So that's the National Organic Standards Board, or NOSB. That's the advisory committee to the Secretary of Agriculture. They advise on the development of the organic standards on the national list. They just specifically put out a discussion document for the spring 2021 meeting that's really looking at the concept of a electronic supply chain mapping and a database or some sort of a organic link system that could provide that information. So I think it's a goal. We're not there yet.
All right, great question, Mark. There's a question here from Mario. Is the training that you mentioned available in foreign languages such as Spanish?
It is not, but perhaps we put that on our to-do list.
I think right.
It is captioned.
It should be.
Yeah.
All right. We've got a question here from Lisa. Lisa is asking, or rather stating, so technically speaking, the organic fraud prevention plan will be a requirement after SOE takes effect for organic certification. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I love it when somebody asks a question like that after we've just spent a lot of time talking, just to put a fine point on it to emphasize that as proposed, should the proposal come through as it was proposed, an organic fraud prevention plan will be a requirement of organic certification. Yes.
All right. So it's not just a wish list item. It's you need it.
You need it. Yeah.
All right. I think we've got time for one more question, and this one comes from Howard. Howard is asking, did the NOP increase enforcement activities to help, such as increasing the 5% testing or affidavits for fallow land?
The testing is not increased as a result of NOP. I will say that testing is many certifiers. I don't know that I could specifically quantify it off the top of my head. Are testing above that 5% requirement. I think that, and certainly in our program, we spend quite a bit of time, a whole section in the guide on testing, because we recognize that testing is a very, very critical tool in being able to determine whether or not a product is organic. Organic is a process-based regulation, and testing is a critical tool to monitor, to figure out whether or not that process is working or not.
All right, I hope that answers your question there. All right, I am going to pull up really quick one more time this sheet of resources. All of these links will be hotlinked, hyperlinked, available in the downloadable slides once those are up on the PGFSI website. I know personally our webmaster is unavailable for the rest of the week, but hopefully he will be able to get these slides up and available for all of you to download next week. In the meantime, the YouTube channel will have the recording posted. So if you want to go back and review, if you can't take all these URLs down really quick, if you want to take a screenshot, pause the video when it's on YouTube, type them in. We want to get you all these resources and have great access to this. And I want to thank Gwen again for providing this slide of all these awesome sources. And just in general, I wanted to thank Gwen and Dr. Spink for taking the time out of their busy schedules to come and give us such a comprehensive and great overview for all of these changes coming to organic food in the next, it's coming up real fast there. Things are happening, and things haven't been happening, and now they are. So thank you both again. Thank you to all of our audience members for joining us today. We hope to see you on a future webinar session. And any parting words of wisdom, Gwen or Dr. Spink, before we sign off for the day?
I'd say just get started. You know, this is something that's required. Your business is vulnerable. Just get started. Take a look at it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. But thank you so much for the opportunity. And reach out. I'm available. Send me an email. We'll go from there.
Absolutely. And if you did have any other questions that we were unable to get to during our Q&A, or maybe you're a bit shy, you didn't want to ask a question live, that's no problem. You can send us an email, pgrfsi@pgrfsi.com, and we would be more than happy to forward that email along to whoever can answer it best for you. So I will take the time now to say, have a great rest of your week, have a good weekend coming up, and we'll see you on the next webinar. Have a great day.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.